You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome, everyone, to a very, very special edition of AEW Unrestricted, the official podcast of All Elite Wrestling. My name is Tony Schiavone, and this is Aubrey Edwards, my longtime close personal friend. How are you, Aubrey?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Tony. You always sound like an announcer. Do you ever turn that off?
Yes, I do.
You
do? As a matter of fact, yes.
Oh.
A lot, as a matter of fact. I say it's a very, very special episode because we are very, very pleased to have with us Amanda Huber, John Huber's wife, and, of course, anyone who worked with Brody and worked with John crossed his path, loved this man. It was a horrible day for not only professional wrestling and wrestlers, but for those of us who knew him personally behind the scenes. It was a terrible day. And Amanda, thanks for being with us. I know it's a tough time for you and your family.
No problem. You also forgot to mention I am the mother to Negative One.
You are the mother to Negative One.
You can't forget that Bobby
is
Lee Jr.
Not all heroes wear capes.
No,
I don't
exactly.
know how she contains that boy, but
actually,
I don't.
Just a little story. I had a chance, which I was very, very excited about doing, going to Disney with you and the boys.
I saw
and
the
and
pictures.
Cody and Brandy.
It was
and
a great day.
It was a great day.
Super, super fun for Brody's birthday.
Right.
And it was a really fun day. It was honestly the first all fun day I've had in a very, very long time. So.
Yeah. And he's quite to keep up with, isn't he?
He's got a lot of energy.
Yeah.
He is just 24/7 all wrestling right. and. But he's a happy kid, so he can't complain.
I heard on the production meeting call earlier, he's already given out like 20 dark chokes today.
He may have.
Only. That's a low for him.
We've only been here like an hour.
Wait till 3 a.m. Yeah, we'll check with Marco then.
Exactly. Has he seen Marco yet?
I don't know if Marco's landed. We should warn Marco. Mm. He knows.
It was a great day to be with Disney and be with your family. And I know there's a lot of terrible things that have happened to you and your family since this time. And It shocked all of us. We had just finished doing a podcast with him.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of when he got sick.
Yeah. Right? So part of the reason I wanted to sit with you guys and talk to you guys is because I wanted to clarify the timeline because there's been a lot of questions. And I just didn't want to keep doing it through Instagram. My Instagram's been private for my entire life.
Sure.
We went public with it to announce his passing.
Right.
Because I didn't want it to be a dirt sheet thing that it came out. I wanted it to come directly from me.
Right.
So it was a little nerve-wracking to do that.
Sure.
And I know it came to a surprise a lot of people because we kept it very quiet.
Yes, absolutely.
My husband was a very private person. He was a public figure, but a very, very private man.
Right.
Did not love the fame aspect of wrestling. Loved performing, loved being a professional wrestler, but was not the type of guy who wanted to be recognized out in public. He was always very gracious when he was, but that wasn't him.
Right.
So I want to just clarify some of the timeline and answer some questions that a lot of people have about what happened.
Right.
So I think if we want to start then, like kind of what did happen? Because I know we had the podcast with him, and I remember specifically like first time we actually got a chance to sit down and talk extensively. Like he was a big Peloton guy.
Yes.
And I'm a big Peloton person. I just got my 30-day achievement. I'm real excited about it. But he had said that in the podcast that it was the first time he had actually quit a ride midway. And I didn't put much thought into it at the time, but that was sort of the beginning of things.
Yeah, so I had been out of town. I was visiting actually friends of mine who actually joined us at Disney. They were the people who flew down, dropped everything in their lives to be with my kids.
Right.
But we'll get to kind of that section of the story in a minute.
Sure.
But I had been in Ohio visiting them, got home with Brody, and Monday came along, and he's like, I've got this podcast tonight, and you got to leave me alone. I got to have dinner. Just keep the kids quiet. And I was like, you guys have met my kids.
It's
not an easy feat to keep them quiet.
Okay, yeah, knowing that now and looking at listening to that podcast back, the fact there was no children or animals in the background, that is a feat.
That is a feat in my house. But he went in the garage. We have our Peloton in the garage. He came out. He's like, I quit my ride. And I was like, that's not like you. Because he's always like making fun of me. And I'd be doing my Peloton rides. I'm like, oh, that was awful. And he's like, oh, come on, you pussy. Like, you can do better. You know, always giving me a hard time.
Right.
That's just who he was.
That's very much him.
Yeah, 100%. And he had never quit a ride before. He'd come in and just be completely head to toe soaked, but never quit. So he came in. He goes, I just quit my ride out there. I'm like, you okay? And he's like, yeah, I just feel like I can't catch my breath. So I have been COVID paranoid, and I whipped out my thermometer, and he's like, no fever. I'm like, huh, that's weird. I was like, we're going to keep an eye on this.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, can you smell? And I like handed him a candle, and I was like, can you smell this? And started going through all that.
Can you still taste things?
Yeah.
Do you have chills? Like running through all the symptoms that we all know forward and backward
exactly.
now.
Exactly. So I was like, okay. So we had dinner. He recorded the podcast. Everything was normal. Tuesday, he tried to go do his workout, did his workout, tried to do a Peloton ride. I came in the house and he's like, I don't know what the hell's going on. I can't get this Peloton ride in. I was like, let me check your temperature again. He's like, I don't have a fever. I don't know what's going on. So he would typically drive to Jacksonville on Tuesday nights.
Right.
So he could check in, be here. And then, like everybody said, he would wrestle. And then Thursdays, he would drive home at like 3-4 in the morning just to be home.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, stay another night, enjoy it, like get a rest without kids around.
Right.
He's like, no, I want to be home.
Sure.
So he would come home. So he drove Tuesday night, drove up to Jacksonville, spent the night, and went, got COVID tested here through AEW,
mm-hmm.
and actually tested negative here at AEW. And Doc Sampson was like, hey, look, I don't trust this. I know you don't feel good. I don't feel safe letting you in the bubble. Go home, come back next week. So he texts me. He's like, oh, I'm going to come home. So he drove home Wednesday, went to go get COVID tested, and he got home right at 5 when COVID tested ended. So I quarantined him to our bedroom, and I slept in the guest room just on the off chance that he was starting COVID.
Right.
I started with a fever, super high fever. Had a fever Thursday, Friday. Thursday went and got the nasal swab, super high fever, just did not feel good. And so I kept him away from the kids, and I would wear a mask anytime I went into the bedroom. I was keeping him hydrated, and he wasn't eating, was drinking, but just not eating.
Mm-hmm.
So Friday, went to urgent care, and they diagnosed him with bronchitis and allergies.
It's a nice combo.
Yeah. Mm. And we were like, that's not what this is.
Sure.
He's like, my lungs just, he's like, I feel like I have pneumonia. And so I was like, tell them that. He's like, no, they said it's bronchitis. He's like, it's not bronchitis.
Doctors are only going to tell you what you have if you tell them what you're feeling.
Yeah. And so they gave him an oral antibiotic, an oral steroid, and allergy medicine. So I went Friday night, got that prescription. Saturday was the same deal. It was just not eating. He hadn't eaten for several days, but he was drinking. I told him, as soon as you stop drinking, you're going to the hospital. As soon as your fever goes above 103, you're going to the hospital. His fever would tap out at 102.9. And I was furious. He was like, are you kidding me? You need to go to the hospital. He's
such
like,
a wrestler.
You said 103. I was like, God damn it. So Sunday, he had finally eaten. And I was like, okay, because I was trying to get him to the hospital Saturday. And he's like, no, I want 24 hours on this antibiotic. So, okay, fine. So Sunday just was awful. His face looked sunken in, and I was like, you need to go to the hospital. Like, I'm done with this. Like, I'm done.
Sure.
He argued with me, and I said, okay, you've got an hour to make a miracle recovery. I'm going to make some phone calls, get somebody to come watch the kids.
Right.
You're going to the hospital.
Sure.
So a friend of mine came over to watch the kids, go down the street to the hospital, and he walked into the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using my shoulder to kind of brace himself, but not putting pressure on me, but just walking alongside me. So we get to the check-in desk, and I was like, you need to sit down. You can't even walk. Like, you're so winded and you're tired and you just need to sit down. He's like, I'm not sitting down. And so I said, we're going to get a wheelchair. I don't need a wheelchair. I said, sit your fucking ass down. I said, mm-hmm. you need to sit down. I said, because if you fall, I can't catch you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm swearing at him in the lobby of a hospital, like a real class act.
Yeah.
and the reception.
I get it.
You know, they're laughing
at me. It happens. Yeah.
So they take him back to triage, and they, you know, take his temperature, and by that time his fever had gone away. They took his oxygen,
right.
A little pulse ox. The girl's like, hold on, let me go get a new machine. Comes back with a new machine. Takes his oxygen again. That's not right. Comes back with a third machine. Realizes that the machines aren't broken. His oxygen was at 52.
Mm.
So a normal person's supposed to be about 100.
Right.
95 to 100.
Oh, okay. No.
Yeah, somebody with severe COPD or asthma.
Asthma, right.
If they're in the middle of an asthma attack, they usually are around 85.
Right.
Okay.
So they were like, what the hell is this? So they rushed him back, got him on oxygen. We thought, okay. So put him on oxygen and, you know, I have pictures of him the day we got in the hospital and he's thumbs up with just the oxygen. They did COVID tests. They're like, this has got to be COVID. We know this is COVID.
Right.
Negative COVID test. While we were in the hospital, got the results from Friday's COVID test that were negative or Thursday's COVID test that were negative. We're like, this isn't COVID. We know it's not COVID. So they admitted him to the hospital. That was Sunday. Wednesday, you know, and every day he seemed to be doing kind of okay. And then he'd seem a little rocky and then kind of okay. Wednesday, they moved him to the ICU. And the reason they told me they were moving in the ICU is because the floor we were on, the nurse ratio, I think, was like 6 to 1.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, we just want a better eye on him. And the one nurse that we had, he was amazing. And I have his name in my phone and I can't remember it, but I think his name was Danny. And he was like, I've been working in the COVID unit for the past few months. This is COVID. And I was like, okay, like COVID, at least we know what this is. He's like, it'll come up as COVID eventually. And we're like, okay. He's like, I want to get him moved to ICU because they have a 2-to-1 ratio and I want him to get more one-on-one care.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, like I guess like this is a little terrifying, but yeah. And he's like, he goes, I just don't want him to get worse and then we move him to ICU. He goes, I want to be proactive.
That's good.
Like, okay, yeah, absolutely.
Good on Danny.
Like Advent Health in Tampa, just absolutely amazing, amazing staff, nurses, doctors, everybody. And in the meantime, I'm keeping this very, very close to the chest. But, you know, a handful of the people at AEW did know what was going on because he had, you know, got sent home from work.
Sure.
Chris Harrington in particular is somebody who we've been friends with for almost 20 years. I've known Chris for a long time. His wife, Alyssa, very close friends of ours. They reached out to me. And they're like, hey, we want to be able to help you. And he's like, I want to give you our HR person's number. Her name's Margaret. And I was like, nope, I'm good. Don't want it. Sorry. Because I've been around wrestling a long time.
Yeah.
I'm also very distrustful of people.
Right.
So I was like, well, not interested.
You have a very public life, but you have a very private way of living that life. And you're being protective of your husband, your life, your kids. So
exactly.
Rightfully so, completely valid way to respond.
And just being in wrestling, I didn't want it to be, you know.
You're worried about dirt sheets.
Brody Lee's in the hospital
right.
and with yeah. COVID and all this other. So I was like, no, I'm not interested. He's like, well, can I give her your number? So Margaret texted me, and a handful of texts, and every day she'd text me, and she'd check in on me, but I didn't trust it. Not going to lie, and I apologize to Margaret now because she is my guardian angel.
Mm. Hi, Margaret.
One
Margaret's
here.
She's amazing.
Ever.
Here.
Absolutely.
She's my favorite.
Yeah.
But
she's great.
Did not trust it because sure. I just didn't trust it. So every day he seemed to get a little bit worse. And I actually put it on my Instagram of the very last text message he sent me
mm-hmm.
was him saying, like, as soon as I get out of here, we're going to live the life we always wanted and go on all the vacations. And he used the word YOLO, which always popped me because it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So fast forwarding a little bit to Halloween, I go up to the hospital and they were taking him for a CAT scan or they were taking him for some kind of scan when I got there. So they wouldn't let me up in the room. So I was waiting in the lobby and the doctor called me and he's like, hey, when are you going to be here? I'm like, well, I'm in the lobby right now. And he's like, okay, you and I need to have a talk.
Oh,
I was like, okay. So I go upstairs and he meets me in the hallway and he's like, hey, we're going to transfer him. Okay. And so I assumed we were going to end up at like Champa General, which is down it's a little bit further away from our house, but it's a bigger hospital. And he's like, your options are Mayo or Shands. And I was like, I don't know anything about either of them. He's like, well, right. Mayo's in Jacksonville, Shands is in Gainesville. And I was like, wait, what? That's where? What wow. the hell?
Like, we're leaving Tampa.
Wait, what do you mean these are my options?
Not only is he transferred, but you're outright leaving Tampa
yeah,
at this point. Yeah,
exactly. And I was like, no, what do you mean? So I was very upset. I was like, all right, like at least in Jacksonville, I know we have people there that I have connections there. I have people who I don't know, but my husband knows and my husband trusts. So let's go to, let's try and make Jacksonville work. So I called Margaret and she was actually with Mega, who's the lawyer. And
Margaret also and Mega, amazing.
Don't even get me started. I'll touch on Mega and Margaret. Okay. We're going to get a whole story about
that. Okay. We need to have them on the podcast.
You really do. They're the most fascinating people ever.
Oh, 100%.
But called them and I was on the speakerphone with them while the doctor had the Mayo Clinic on speaker. And they were kind of like hemming and hawing about transferring him. And the doctor goes, we need to transfer him. This is a matter of life and death. He needs to go on ECMO, which I had never heard of before. And he needs a possible lung transplant. And that was the first time I had heard about it. So wow. While I'm on the phone with these two people who I've never met,
right,
and the hospital and the doctors, they tell me this. So I kind of broke down.
Yeah,
I'm not a big crier.
Gratefully
I've cried maybe four or five times in this whole process. So had a full breakdown in the hospital. And the doctor said, you need to go. I'm sorry you heard it that way. I really didn't mean to tell you, but I need them to understand how serious this is. He goes, go home. Pack a bag. We're going to airlift him to Jacksonville.
Okay.
I was like, are you, what? Like, what is this?
This sounds like a movie all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And he was still awake. He was still conscious at that point. He wasn't intubated. He was still just on the breathing machines. And they were like, we don't want you to see him right now because if you go in as upset as you are, you're going to upset him and that's going to
make it worse.
Possibly trigger something.
Sure.
So, side note, rewinding just a little bit, the night before, Brody had been asking me for months, I want to be Orange Cassidy for Halloween. Brody, nobody knows who the fuck Orange Cassidy is. No offense, Orange Cassidy. I love you, but like
everyone here knows who Orange Cassidy is.
Everybody here and everybody who's going to listen to this knows who the fuck Orange Cassidy is.
Right.
I was like, you're going to go trick-or-treating and these parents are going to be like, this kid's dressed in sunglasses and a denim jacket.
Yeah.
He's lazy. Where's his costume?
Literally the last, I'm not even joking when I say one of the last spoken words my husband ever said to me was, go buy him a fucking denim jacket. Because I was telling him how Brody was mad at me the night before because I wouldn't go to Walmart at 9 o'clock at night to buy him a denim jacket.
Yeah.
And so I was telling John that story in the hospital on Wednesday or Friday, the day before Halloween. I said, yeah, Brody's mad because I wouldn't go buy him a denim jacket.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm mad at you too, behind the breathing mask. And I go, you're mad at me? And he goes, yeah. I go, why are you mad at me? He goes, go buy the kid a fucking denim jacket. I was like, you're ridiculous. Right. So I left the hospital early to go. So we ended up going to the store that night to pick up the denim jacket. And I was like, what am I going to do for Nolan's costume? So at the last minute, decided to dress up Nolan as John, Brody, whatever.
Yeah.
As just a way of like making him kind of cheered up. Because this was supposed to be the first Halloween he was actually going to be home.
Sure.
Because prior to this, he was always traveling for Halloween.
Right.
So this was his first Halloween to be home with the kids.
Oh, wow.
So he was very upset about being in the hospital and being... So I had stayed up all night long painting Nolan's little costume.
It was adorable, by the way.
Super cute. I was so proud of it. As a surprise for John.
Right.
And so Halloween night, or Halloween morning, I run home, pack my bags, sit down with Brody and tell him what was going on. We kept it. I kept everything very real with Brody, but also in 8-year-old terms.
Yeah.
Explained to him, never once was like, it's going to be okay, because I'm a very big believer in not lying to your kids.
Sure.
So I was like, you know, this is really bad. Dad's really sick, but he's going to go to the best hospital in Florida, and, you know, this is what we're doing. So a friend of mine, who we were going to go to their neighborhood for Halloween, I called her. I said, hey, can you still come? Can you pick up Brody up? So that way his Halloween's just not ruined. So she picked Brody up. And so I got the kids dressed in their costume. And I was like, all right, let me get pictures of the kids real quick so I can have them all dressed up and show John. So when I go back to the hospital and I'm calm, I can go in and show him and say, hey, like, at least this is what's good. And, you know, you're going to be okay. You know,
finding the silver linings.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we did that, took the Halloween pictures, and packed my bag. And as I was hugging Nolan goodbye, the hospital called me. And they're like, he crashed, and he's intubated.
Oh, boy.
So went back up to the hospital, and I walked into the room, and it I don't know, it just garbage everywhere. And it was horrifying to look at because he had the tube down his throat, and it was just It was awful.
Right.
So I couldn't actually sit in the room with him. I waited in a conference room down the hall myself while we waited for our Mercy flight transfer.
Okay.
And it was just the one of the worst moments of my life.
Yeah. I'm sure it was. We want to talk about transferring to Jacksonville and the support that you've had. We're talking with Amanda Huber. You're listening to AEW Unrestricted.
This is AEW Unrestricted. Aubrey and Tony here with a very special conversation with Amanda. I want to thank you so much for sharing, you know, just your time and your story and your family, because like it's been very clear both internally and from all the pictures and stories externally, like you guys are a part of the AEW family. So I can't thank you enough for being here today and sharing this with us, because I know that this is a lot.
Honestly, I can't thank you guys enough, because I know I don't owe anybody any answers or any explanation.
You do not.
But at the same time, you know, I know people care. Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a lot of questions, and we kept it so quiet and tight to the chest that a lot of people, even people who were very, very close to us, that were completely knocked on their ass by this.
So you had mentioned that John crashed, he's in tubes, and they need to transfer him to Jacksonville.
Yep.
So what happens then?
So at like 1 a.m., and I, like I said, I had stayed up all night the night before painting Nolan's costume. So I didn't go to sleep until about 3:34 in the morning.
Oh, boy.
And got up nice and early at 7, or I got up at 6:30 to be at the hospital bright and early on Halloween, because I was planning to leave the hospital like an hour before visiting hours were over so my kids could enjoy Halloween. We were going to go out in a neighborhood with friends of ours who we knew had been safe, and just let the kids be kids. So they airlifted us at about 1 in the morning. First time I've ever been on a private jet or private plane, and my view was my husband's feet. Didn't even get a window seat. Was texting my best friend, making jokes with her, saying, like, it was – you know, zero star flight, because I didn't even get a window seat. There was no drink service.
Right.
You know, just trying to make life of light of the situation, because what else can you do in that moment?
You have to.
So we get to Mayo Clinic we get to Jacksonville, and we get ambulance ride from the Jacksonville airport to the Mayo Clinic. While we're in the ambulance, they were like yelling about his oxygen levels, and I'm just sitting in the front seat like, cool, this is fine. And all I could just picture is that like meme with the dog with the room on fire, and I'm like, this is fine
with
this
the mug.
Fine. Right. Yeah, this is fine. I'm okay with the things that are unfolding around.
Right.
So they stick me in a hallway, and this is like 2 in the morning, and they're like, we have to get him in a room. You have to sit here. I was like, okay. So I wait 90 minutes, and I'm just sitting in this hallway for 90 minutes. Haven't slept in, you know, a very long time, and just literally the most stressful and traumatic day of my life.
Sure.
So I finally, like, go walk down the hallway, and I grab a nurse, and they look at me like I have 6 heads, because, you know, what are you doing? What is a person walking through the ICU at 3 in the morning? It's like,
someone who is left in the hallway.
Right, right.
And they're like, we forgot about you. And I was like, I noticed. Thanks.
Yeah.
So the doctors come, and they start explaining to me the process of ECMO, which is terrifying to hear about it. And it was terrifying to witness the very first day. But essentially what ECMO is the way they explained it to me is basically dialysis for your lungs.
Okay.
So what it is, it's absolutely horrifying, but you have a garden hose sized tube coming out of your neck. And one coming out of, you have one in your carotid that goes, pumps blood straight to your heart.
Right.
And then one out of your vein in your leg.
Right. Okay.
And so what it does is it pulls the blood out of your leg, spins it through this machine and oxygenates it, and then pumps it directly to your heart. So your heart can push it through the rest of your body.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So basically takes the place of.
It was doing the work for his lungs, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So they tell me that, and, you know, you have. With any surgery, even like, you know, your tonsils out, you have to hear all the risks of what that surgery entails. So at, you know, 4 a.m., I'm being told basically my husband's going to die. So I had a very rough night that night.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, hey, you know, we're going to prep him for surgery. Why don't you go home and go to sleep? And I was like, home is in Tampa. I'm not going home.
You mean the hallway?
Like, And they're like, well, do you have a hotel? And I was, and AEW actually took care of my hotel the entire time I was there. And I was like, I can pay for it. Like, we have the money. And they're like, no, we got you. And right. I was like, no, it's really fine. Like, guys, it's really fine. I don't want to owe anybody favors.
Right.
Because, again, very, you know, like abused dog kind of thing. Like, I just don't trust it.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
So I was like, oh, God, what do you guys want to want from me?
You're kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, okay, cool, they're paying for my hotel, but at what point is this going to backfire type
thing?
Exactly. Right.
And they're like, we got you. We're a family. And I always look at corporations when they say we're a family with a side. I like, no, you're not.
Yeah, no, it's a load of bullshit.
Side note, AEW, 100% a family. Like, I can't even begin to describe
all those other places are bullshit. Here, it's real.
It's like the most real thing ever here. But they're like, why don't you go get some sleep? And I was like, no, I can't sleep. So I ended up going to taking an Uber to Publix because I realized I hadn't eaten anything since Friday night. And this is like Sunday, like morning, like 9 a.m.
Yeah, you should
and
probably
I was like,
eat.
I haven't eaten in a very long time. I had the worst headache of my life. Mm-hmm. Took an Uber, and my migraine was so bad that I vomited in my Uber. And I was like, I swear I don't have COVID. I'm just really sick.
Five stars. I'm sorry.
And I like warned him. I was like, I have a migraine. I'm really sorry right now because of all the crying and all the trauma and the lack of sleep and no food.
You're dehydrated. You're undernourished.
Exactly. And I was like, oh God, this guy is going to, and I'm like getting picked up from the Mayo Clinic. So I'm like, this guy's going to assume I'm sick.
Right.
Right.
So sure. I warned him. I didn't throw up in his car, but yeah. I was like, hey, can you pull over?
At least out the window.
Yeah, just leaning out the door. And I'll like just screaming, like, it's not COVID, I swear.
It's not COVID. Blah.
But he came out of the surgery from ECMO because I went back to the hotel. I showered and got my stuff. And the way the Mayo Clinic's set up is the hospital, the Marriott attached to it, is literally like, it's a beautiful, beautiful walk. I have pictures of my walk every day. It was like my favorite part of every day. It was because it was this beautiful, like, trails and trees and ponds and ducks and all that. So, you know, he got put on the ECMO, and the first day walking into that was, it was a lot.
Yeah.
Because just to see him with not only the ventilator tube down his throat, mm-hmm. but the ECMO cannulas,
mm-hmm.
it was horrifying.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I got used to it, but it was a very, like, it is not a pleasant look.
Right. And he was not conscious, was he?
He was not conscious. No, was awake. He was very sedated. Mm-hmm. And the one nurse, I have to say this is part of the reason I wanted to, like, talk about this. The staff at the Mayo Clinic were the most kind and compassionate and incredible human beings on the planet. They do not get enough credit for everything they did. Not only taking care of my husband, but they took care of me too. And they were constantly like checking in with me and talking to me. And they explained everything that was happening. And they, every time they did anything, they're like, do you have any questions? Or anytime I had a question, they never once made me feel like I shouldn't be asking that. They explained to me what everything was happening. Just everything along the way, they were incredible. So the first day walking into him on the ECMO cannulas was, it was a lot. And right. the one nurse, Alexis, sat me down and explained to me how everything worked and explained to me that it was like dialysis. And
right.
she's like, you need to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. She's like, do you have a doctor? She's like, I'm not trying to push medication on you, but what you're going through, because I was having the worst panic attacks in a hospital while wearing a mask. So when you're wearing a mask,
you're not really
having
right. a lot of, oh, right, wow, right. yeah.
It was really bad.
Sure.
She's like, you get help. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right. So, you know, I did. And a big recurrent theme is everybody's been like, you're so strong and you're I admire your strength. I am medicated.
Oh,
I am,
bro.
I am in therapy.
Bro, meds right. are great.
like, please, like, if you
But admitting you need meds and taking them is strength in and of itself.
Agreed. But I just having that's part of where that strength is coming is because I'm taking the steps to talk to a therapist and
Good.
I'm taking the steps to take medication. And I'm not medicated. I'm not like drugged up, but I am on.
We all need a little help sometimes. It's fine.
Makes the world a little bit more manageable.
Right. Yeah. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. It was a big step to admit that I needed that help because I am not somebody who likes to take help from anybody.
That is the hardest part is admitting it.
Yeah. So I had a really rough time with that. So, you know, we had been there for a little bit, a couple of days at that point. And this is another story about how Miss Margaret is my guardian angel, as I would just get like,
hi, Margaret.
She'd text me and she'd be like, have you eaten? And I'm like, yeah, of course. It's a lie.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, I'd get a knock on my door and it would just be food.
Aww. She would just send me
food. Yeah.
Although we had to have a discussion because Margaret's under the impression that I was like one of four people in my room because she would just
she'd mom you and send you a
she
feast.
She would order me like four different meals and she's like, I didn't know what you wanted. But it worked out nice because I'd end up having, you know, meals.
Leftovers. For every cheeseburger for breakfast. It's great.
Mexican food was my jam.
So, oh, man. Why are we not best friends?
We are best friends.
Yay!
But they took really good care of me. So I think it was November 9th. I came to talk to AEW.
Yes. It was the right before the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Right.
So I had talked to Megan and Margaret and they're like, hey, if it's okay with you, we're going to let everybody know what's going on. Is there anything you want us to say or not say? What do you want? And every step of the way with everything that's happened from day one to now, including everything that's happening with Brody Lee Jr. and Negative One, every single step of the way, everybody's always come to me and been like, what are you okay with this? What is this okay? Is this not okay? What can we do better? And I'm always like, so Margaret and Mega were like, we want to tell everybody what's going on. What do you want out of this? I said, I just want everybody to keep their mouth shut. That's all I'm asking is I'm asking for discretion because I can't imagine being in my husband's position. And at the time, we thought he was going to get better because he was showing signs of improvement. I thought for sure he'd wake up and he would be furious to read on the dirt sheets that he's in the hospital.
Right.
So I was like, just all I ask is for everybody's discretion. And she's like, absolutely, you got it. And I said, if you need me to go and speak in front of everybody and guilt the fuck out of them, and they have to look at my face and see me and see who is asking this of them.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we didn't want to ask you to do that, but like, if you're cool with
it. Sent your offer.
And I was like, no, I will. I said, because I want them to keep their mouths shut.
Sure.
I said, I know wrestling and I've been around wrestling a long time, and I know that I fully expected it to hit the dirt sheets.
So did
every
I.
Every day.
So did I.
I think everyone here did. I check Reddit every day. Oh, and like,
me in the hospital, like on Reddit every day. And like, there was, you know, rumors of the ankle injury because every day I was like, okay.
The storyline with Dustin, he's going to come back. Yeah. And like, everyone's coming up with all these theories and stuff. And it's like, we're testing AEW people and nobody's saying anything. It's like, yeah, because we don't owe you shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so another, like rewinding just a little bit. Everybody has thought it was COVID since the jump. And even in the first few days we were at Mayo Clinic, they thought it was COVID.
Mm-hmm.
I have pictures of me in full PPE to be in his room because they thought it was COVID. So I had to have the N95. I had to have the hairnet. I had to have literally full PPE to be in his room.
Sure.
Every COVID test came back negative. To the point where I was like, can we just get a positive one? Just so we have a fucking answer
of what's going on.
Seriously. Right. Seriously,
I just want an answer. That's all I want. And like, they did a bronchial wash at one point, and the one doctor was telling me that at Mayo Clinic they've had a couple of cases where people would test negative for COVID and then they do a bronchial wash and they'd find it residing deep in the lungs. So they were like, oh, that's what it's going to be.
Right.
Negative. Every fucking test was negative, and it was like, I don't, what is this? There's just not not 100% sure, because I actually don't have the autopsy report yet, but I believe the official diagnosis was idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, which literally means that his lungs scarred up, and the idiopathic part means they don't fucking know why. They don't know what happened to his lungs, but they know his lungs were just completely scarred over.
Damn.
And so talking to the doctors and the nurses, they think part of it, they don't know what it was, whether if it was an pneumonia that got out of control or what. They think whatever fever he had was his body fighting off whatever infection was in his lungs. The problem is that his body doing that high fever he had for a couple days basically attacked his lung tissue and just scarred it over.
Mm.
So by the time we were in the hospital, there was no infection. Everything was already out of his system. But the leftover scar tissue was there. So on like x-rays and scans, your lungs are supposed to be, I believe, totally black on the scan.
Mm-hmm.
And his were completely white. They were completely scarred over. So that's why they put him on the ECMO, as a chance to have his body rest and not use his lungs, and let his lungs just try and heal. That was the hope.
But, right.
You know, obviously that didn't happen.
Sure.
So why was a transplant not an option?
So the transplant actually was an option. So they had talked to me about the transplant the day I actually came to AEW back on the 9th. I signed paperwork to start the transplant process, which was a very overwhelming moment. And then got picked up to go talk to AEW.
Us. Right. Which we appreciate, by the way.
No,
that was really, really, like, I cannot thank you enough for standing in front of a group of people and telling us what was happening. Because I had only heard Brody was sick.
Yeah.
I knew nothing more than that.
Me
so,
too.
Just being open and transparent and trusting of that information, that was, I can't thank you enough for that.
I knew how much my husband meant to everybody here. We have so many friends here, so much so that it blew me away. But knowing that how many people cared, how many people were worried about him, and just trying to keep it quiet. And I wanted people to see me and put like a face and know who I was and know like, this is why I'm asking. It's not just because I'm trying to be secretive, but it's because that's what he would have wanted. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't have wanted it all over the dirt sheets. He wouldn't have wanted everybody knowing he was sick. He wouldn't have wanted the fanfare. That's just not who he was.
Right.
So coming in to talk to you guys, it felt like the right move and it felt like that's what I should have done.
Yeah. So the transplant, you had basically started that process that day.
Yeah, so I filled out the paperwork for the transplant, and then he showed signs of getting better. Mm. He actually showed signs of getting better, and I have a video of him. He started physical therapy. Things were looking up.
Wow.
And it was right around my birthday, actually, which, kind of side note story, I had made an off comment to one of the nurses at the hospital about how I love Christmas decorations. And my husband, not a Christmas person like me, and he believes Christmas decorations should go up like beginning of December. And so my loophole is November 14th, which is my birthday. So I said, oh, yeah, the 14th is usually my loophole. And this was right around the time I came to talk to AEW. I said, oh, yeah, that's my loophole. And she's like, that's a weird date. Why? And I was like, oh, you know, that's my birthday. She's like, oh, I didn't know that. So this was, like I said, I think that in the 8th or 9th. So on my birthday, I walked in the hospital and the nurses had taken IV tubing and paper and made me a birthday banner.
Oh, my God.
And then I was sitting on the couch just playing on my phone, probably scrolling, you know, the dirt sheets and Reddit. Mm-hmm. And they shut off the lights. So I assumed they were coming in to do something with John, and they walked in with a birthday cake. And came
oh, my God.
And I cried like a baby.
I bet.
Barb was the nurse who I mentioned something to, and she apparently went on their little group and said, hey,
Mr.
Huber's wife's birthday is this week. She's going to be here. Let's make it special.
That's so incredible.
So, like, these are the people who, when I say they took care of me, it wasn't just my husband that was their patient. Like, they became my friends.
Right.
And they became people who I think are the most special and incredible people on the planet.
We're talking with Amanda Huber on AEW Unrestricted. AEW Unrestricted continues with our special guest, Amanda Huber. And Amanda, we were talking about the last time we were talking about your birthday and in the month of November. And John was getting better at that time,
yeah,
right?
He was getting better. And they had performed a tracheotomy on him so they could remove him from the ventilator. Mm-hmm. And then they put oxygen through his tube. And he was able to wake up, and he started, like, communicating with me, and he'd smile, and he'd wink at me, and he'd mouth words to me. He couldn't talk, but he could mouth words.
Mm-hmm.
But because at that point he had been in the hospital for a couple of weeks, he was on a feeding tube. He was very malnourished. He was very weak, very tired. But he started on physical therapy, and things were looking up. And then he got taken off the ventilator and got put on straight oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the day that things started going bad. He had a really good day that day, and that was the next step, was to take him off the ventilator, so the machine that was breathing for him, and just have him on oxygen. And we were super hopeful, and he had a panic attack while on the oxygen. And pretty much from that day on, things went to shit. And this was end of November.
Okay.
So I spent pretty much the entire month of November in Jacksonville, like the entire month. I saw my kids once. They had come to the AEW show. It was the first time my kids got to meet everybody, and there are pictures of Brody running around with the belts, and it was just a nice break, and it was my chance. One of my really good friends, she drove my kids up from Tampa, and it was the first time I had just gotten to see them and hold them, and I'm a stay-at-home mom, so, like, I was just so excited to see my kids again. So for my birthday, like I said, I spent my birthday at the hospital. For Thanksgiving, I didn't go home. I actually spent Thanksgiving with Mega.
Yeah.
We ate sushi on the beach, or, well, sushi in her house, but we sat on the beach all day.
You can see the beach from her house. It works.
It was just, it was honestly the best Thanksgiving I ever had, because it was just, it was a nice break.
Sure.
But I had gone home for Nolan's birthday on the 1st. But outside of that, I lived in Jacksonville for 2 months. And he started going downhill. He started, just every day was filled with bad news. And we'd make, they had warned me when we started ECMO that ECMO was a long process, and that there were going to be days where it was going to be two steps forward, one step back. And then there were going to be days where it was like three steps backwards, but then it would be a step forward. So she's like, it's kind of a side shuffle with ECMO. So I was prepared for ups and downs, but starting in December, it kind of went downhill, and it was consistently downhill. Right. So I feel like every day just, it kept getting worse.
Right.
And I was doing text updates to people, because once I had talked to AEW, more people had found out, they were very concerned, wanted updates. So I would put notes in my phone and then just copy it and paste it to everybody.
Sure.
So that way I wasn't missing information, and it was... it was tough.
Yeah.
So we moved forward. He's, like I said, he got worse. So then they're like, all right, we're going to revisit the lung transplant thing.
Okay.
And the doctor came in and talked to me, and he basically was like, he needs a lung transplant or end of life care. And I was like, the fuck, man?
Oh, yeah. Boy.
Wow.
I didn't realize
that. Hi, hello. Who are you? What?
Yeah. So he was a very nice man, but very no nonsense, and was
very
like,
straight into the
here
point.
Is your, here are your two options. Because I was like, you know, what are my options at this point? Like, because they had talked to me about the process of the transplant and how it was completely life changing. The requirements for post transplant life were things for me wouldn't be a big deal, but for him, like, he would have had to give up wrestling. He would be immune compromised for the rest of his life.
Yep.
Right.
Just a lot of the things that they would have asked of him with a transplant were a lot. So when they had told me all the information with the transplant, I was like, okay, well, what if we don't go transplant? Like, can we kind of ride this ECMO thing a little longer and see if there's any improvement? And he's like, no. He's not showing any signs. He's actually getting worse. It's this or nothing.
Wow.
So that was super, super rough.
Yeah.
Moment for me.
Yeah,
I understand.
Obviously. Understatement. I can't imagine.
So I had driven home, and they were like, we're going to start the workup for making sure he's okay for transplant. And I got back to Jacksonville. I spent literally a single night at home, surprised the kids, and then drove home that following night as soon as they went to bed, because I didn't want to be there when they woke up. So I would drive the drive back to Jacksonville in the middle of the night. And I got back up to the hospital in Tampa, or in, I'm sorry, the Mayo Clinic, and they were like, hey, he's got an infection in his lungs.
Oh, no.
And we were like, I was like, how did he get an infection in his lungs?
He's been in a hospital.
Right.
And they said what it is. It's a really super common bacteria that is just everywhere. But because he was so immunocompromised and in such terrible shape that the bacteria had grown... and his lungs were just, like, he was fucked.
Right, he was shutting down, right?
Yeah. So it was like, what?
Yeah.
So they're like, we'll see. So right around that time was my anniversary with John. It was the 13th. His birthday is the 16th. And Brody had been having a real rough time because I'm not joking when I say... since this kid came out, he's been obsessed with wrestling. Like, he just, I have pictures of him at a year old just wrestling his bear. It was the only thing he would sit still for is wrestling. And he just loves wrestling.
Sure.
That's all he, that's what he eats, sleeps. We have a rule on school days that he is not, he does virtual school, so he's not allowed to do anything around wrestling during school hours because he would, his grades started slipping and we were like, what's going on? And it, we found out he was running into the living room anytime he had finished his schoolwork to watch wrestling. And he would get, like, his grades started slipping and there was one test he did where John and I were like, what the hell, man? He got like a 14 out of 20, but like two of the answers he didn't even answer. He just left them blank.
Because he just wanted to finish to go watch wrestling.
Go watch wrestling. So he was having a real rough time, and Jericho had said to me, like, if you need anything at all, you let me know. If you need to go back to Tampa, let me know. If you need the kids to come here, anything you need. So I had talked to Brody, and he was just having a really rough time with things. So I was like, well, what do you want for Christmas? And he's like, I want Dad home. I'm like, that's not happening. So
what's the second thing you want for Christmas?
He's like, I
want
to go to AEW. So ended up talking with Harrington and Margaret and Mega and Jericho and put Brody on Jericho's plane, private jet, mm-hmm. to come here to Jacksonville.
Right.
To just be here. Yep. Got to spend a couple days. It was actually John's birthday on that show. And I was waiting to hear back from the transplant team. And every day they were like, okay, we'll let you know tomorrow. We'll let you know tomorrow. And they met. I knew that they were meeting that night. And I was going to get a definitive yes or no.
Mm.
I was waiting to hear back. And I knew when I didn't get a call when I was at AEW that the answer was no.
Like, right.
I knew in my heart the answer was no because of the infection. Yeah. So Mega ended up taking Brody that Friday so I could go up to the hospital because I hadn't been able to go up to the hospital because Brody was with me. And I walked in, and the one nurse, Penny, she's like, oh, you know, I'm so sorry. And I was like, okay. And she's like, wait, they didn't call you? And I was like, no.
Oh, no.
So I was like, but, like, I knew.
And yeah, not call is the same thing.
She got, like, super upset. And I was like, I'm not mad. Like, I knew the answer.
Yeah.
Like, deep in my heart, I knew it was a no. So I had called John's aunt and uncle who had come down to watch the kids. My friends, Sophia and Joe, they flew down in November, and then Tom and Lori took over in December.
Mm-hmm.
So I called Tom and Lori, and I said, hey, this is what we were worried about, but we're going to have to start end-of-life care.
Yeah.
So Penny came in, she's like, don't call anybody. Don't call anybody yet. Doctor wants to talk to you before you make any phone calls. So he pulled me into a conference room, and he's like, are you ready to give up? And I was like, no, I'm not ready to give up. Like,
right.
No,
sure.
Do I have a choice? And he's like, you know, I know that the transplant doctors made it very black and white. He goes, I am not ready to give up on him. He goes, I think it's a long shot, but he goes, he's got so much going for him that I want to try. And he's like, I want to try other hospitals. I want to try other centers. I want to know that if he goes to end of life care, we have exhausted every possible option. And I was like, all right, let's do it. So the days leading up to Christmas, I went home on the 23rd. And I went up to the hospital that morning, talked to the nursing staff. And I was like, here's the deal. I am going home for the next 2 days. Unless he needs surgery, I don't want to hear from you guys. I will call and get an update every day. I don't want to hear any bad news. So if a hospital, because we had gotten turned down by a couple of the other transplant centers already, and we were still waiting to hear back on some of them. I said, I don't want to hear if we've got turned down. I said, I want 2 days with my kids. That's all I want. Okay. So I get home on Christmas Eve. The hospital called me. And it was the only doctor I wasn't a fan of.
No.
Yeah. I had every doctor. And the worst part is I had never even talked to this doctor. He called me. And he's like, can you come up? And I was like, no, I'm at home with my kids.
Yeah.
He's like, well,
Christmas
you need
Eve,
to.
Dick.
It's Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, you need to come here. And I was like, no, I don't.
You need to get some better bedside manner, sir.
So he was like, you need to come up. And I go, why? He goes, we need to do end of life. And I was like, it's Christmas fucking Eve, motherfucker. Like,
yeah.
Are you kidding? I'm very patient. Like, I'm very kind, especially to anybody in a service job, because I've worked service jobs my whole life. So I'm ultra kind to those people because I know the abuse that they suffer. So every nurse, every doctor, I'm always super nice to. And I was like, no. He's like, well, we need to do this. And I was like, no, I don't. I said, I had already talked to the nursing staff And they had told me that if I say I'm not ready and I need a few days, you have to agree. Like, you can't make this decision for me. He's like, well, his kidneys are failing and his heart's failing. And he's like, I just don't want him to pass before you're up here. And I was like, that's a risk I'm going to take. I'm sorry, but
it's Christmas.
It's Christmas Eve. I have a 3-year-old and an 8-year-old. Like, I am, or actually, yeah, like, I was like, I'm not going to do this. It's Christmas Eve. Yeah. Like, my kids don't even know that their dad's dying.
Right.
Like, I'm not doing this. And I was furious with him. And I was like, I'm not coming up.
Yeah.
And so I hung up with him and I was shaking mad. And I called back and I talked to one of the nurses and she answered and she's like, I'm so sorry. And she's like, I did not know the conversation was going to go like that. And I was like, I am furious. Like, sure. This is not fucking
You have every
okay.
right to be. That's yeah. terrible.
Like, I told you guys this is Christmas Eve. So she's like, do what you need to do. You know, you understand the risk. And I was like, I understand. But that was the risk from day one in the hospital. Even when we were in Tampa and he was still conscious, that when I would leave the hospital, there's a risk something could go wrong.
Sure.
If he went in for his tonsils, there's a risk something can go wrong.
Sure.
So I called my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, and they hopped on a flight. So they came down and they were with us Christmas Day. Spent Christmas Day with the kids, just pretending everything was normal, which was really tough to do.
Sure it was.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we had a really good Christmas Day.
Good.
And then that night, my brother and sister-in-law and I drove up to Jacksonville overnight. That night, checked into the hotel. Tom and Lori... My mother-in-law was staying at my house, too, and the kids drove up the next day. So I went up to the hospital to start the paperwork, fill everything out. And when I called them on Christmas Eve, I was like, I had talked to the nursing staff earlier in the week about, hey, what's this going to look like? What am I, if that, and Penny was so sweet, and she's like, no, we're not worrying about that. And I was like, but be real with me. And she's like, no, this is not how this is going to go. And I was like, but if it does? And she's like, well, you're going to stay in the same room and you're going to have the same nurses. And I was like, okay, good. That's what I want. Like, I don't want to change nurses. I don't want to change floors or rooms, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I want these people.
Mm-hmm.
So on Christmas Eve, I called and I said, hey, there's about 6 nurses that I was super close with. Like, I got to know everybody. Because my day, every day, I'd wake up first thing in the morning, eat my breakfast at the hotel, I'd go to the hospital. Be at the hospital from 8 a.m.-ish till about noon or 1,
mm-hmm.
walk back to the hotel, have my lunch, walk mm-hmm. back to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I would be there till about 8 or 9 at night just because I got to know the night staff that way. And like Alita and all the amazing night staff nurses, I got to know them as well. So I said, hey, what are the chances I can get somebody, just one of the nurses to be somebody I know on the 26th. And they're like, well, you know, we don't know if we can, you know, scheduling wise, we don't know. Mm. And I said, okay, can I give you some names? I said, cause he, in the ECMO rooms, there's 2 nurses at all times. So I got very close with a very large group of people.
Right.
And I said, if you could have Penny, Jill, Barb, Alexis, Austin, any of them, please. Like any of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I'm not a big crier.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not who I am. I cried one night at Mega's
mm-hmm.
and the day they told me they were transferring us.
Right.
So that was kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
So on the 26th, I got up to the hospital and they had put both Barb and Jill in the room and Penny was the floor nurse. And as soon as I saw Jill, I started sobbing and I was like, I'm just so happy to see you.
Yeah.
Cause Jill was his favorite when he was still kind of awake at mm-hmm. one point. Jill was his favorite and Jill and I had become very, very friendly and we had talked about just our lives and our kids and she just felt so safe in that moment. And so I have so much love for her and Barb and Penny. So we filled out the paperwork. Margaret and Mega came up to the hospital, said goodbye to John. And I had been really close with Cody throughout this whole process. Sure. And I know it's been out there before of how Brody Lee Jr., his best friend in the whole world since he was like 2 years old, is Biggie from WWE.
From WWE, yeah.
So I called them both, I think Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, I'm not sure. And I said, hey, I have a huge favor to ask both of you. And I said, if you guys want to say no, you can say no.
Yeah.
I want you guys to be with me when we tell Brody.
Oh, wow.
Because I wanted him to be safe. And like, that was the worst part of all of this, is telling your 8-year old, like, hey, your favorite person in the world, your hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to die today. Like, how do you crush somebody?
Yeah.
Sure. So I had called Cody and Biggie, and Cody drove in from Atlanta that morning. He left at 8 in the morning. So, like, that's the type of human being Cody is. And I will never be able to thank him enough for everything he's gone above and beyond. And with Cody, he shares such a unique perspective, because with Brody hasn't really experienced a lot of death in his life. Both my parents are alive. My mother-in-law is alive. John's dad passed well before John and I ever started dating.
Right.
So Brody had never really lost anybody. So Cody had the unique perspective of, Brody knew Dusty from our time in WWE, and we would be at all the NXT shows. So Brody got to know Dusty, and Dusty knew Brody, and, you know, right, Brody would play with him. So Cody has that perspective of having your dad be this larger than life WWE superstar.
Oh, wow.
Also, it's your dad.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so I had said to Cody, I said, I want you by Brody's side for throughout this. If you're okay with it, if it's too much, like, please, by all means, tell me, I'm not going to be offended. And he's like, no, I got you. So Cody and Big E came up to the hospital, got to see John. Mm-hmm. 'Cause in his final day, with Comfort Care, you're only allowed one visitor in the hospital. But once you get moved to end of life care, you're allowed more visitors to come and say goodbye. So, like I said, Mega and Margaret came. Margaret prayed and just beautiful moment. And then Cody and Biggie came up, got to see him. Spears, Tyler Breeze, and Spears' wife Cassie. They're three of our best friends, John and I. They came up to the hospital. I called them that day and was like, hey, today's it. Sorry, guys. And they're like, we're in the car now. And I was like, you don't have to come up. And they're like, no, we do.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up to the hospital, and I brought them into the room, the three of them into the room, while we walked back to the hotel with Cody and Big E. With them, told Brody, like,
yeah,
I die.
Hey,
well, it's not an easy story, but thank you for sharing that with us.
But
you're an incredible human being.
Yeah, you really are.
I know.
Girls,
yeah, yeah.
Sorry, but I do flex with humor.
Right. I understand. I'm the same way.
I think that's one of the reasons that, like, we hit it off real fast. Like, because I was a kid. Like, I was 12 when my dad passed away, and my mom had to tell me.
Yeah.
So I have an incredible amount of respect for her, and I have an incredible amount of respect for you, because that's nothing that you ever, like, as a parent, that's something you never want to do.
Oh,
so, like, no one has any practice. No one wants to tell you how to do it, because, damn, girl.
Like, how do you do that? How do you know that, like,
there's not, like, an instruction manual of, like, hey, how do you break your kid's heart?
Like, knowing that, like, this is my, you know, my kids are my favorite people in the world. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my husband and my kids, like, they're my everything. Yeah. And knowing that I had to just crush him. And like I said, we never lied to him. I never diminished
what was going on
with John, but I wasn't like, hey, your dad's on ECMO and, you know, his lung capacity is at zero. You know, I didn't like tell him all that stuff.
Well, but he'll have questions when he gets older, and you'll be honest with him.
Exactly.
And he'll respect you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, so Amanda, a lot of people have wondered, did you have a service for Brody?
So we didn't, because of COVID, and after being in the hospital with him and knowing he didn't have COVID, but knowing that ECMO is how they treat patients with COVID and seeing the devastation, I was like, we can't do this. We can't. So his AEW celebration of life, that was his funeral.
Damn.
The outpouring of love from the wrestling community has been unreal.
Right.
The amount of people from every corner of the wrestling world have reached out to me and had their stories about John, and all of that is, it's been kind of breathtaking to hear these stories and hear how he touched people. And I would have loved to have done a funeral, but I just, I can't risk anybody else's health.
Mm-hmm. So I understand that.
The AEW show that was put on, that was his send-off, and that was his funeral, and that was our way of saying goodbye to him. And I thought it was
a beautiful tribute.
It was so beautiful, and that was actually, I cried the day he passed when I saw the nurses, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't cry at all day at TV.
Yeah.
Was fine. And Jess had actually texted me the night before, and she's like, hey, I finished the tribute video. Do you want to watch it?
Oh, no.
And I said, no, I'm good. I said, I trust you.
Mm-hmm.
Jess does great work.
Yeah. So then standing in the ring and watching that tribute was the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was actually ever shown, but I broke. I completely snapped.
Yeah.
And I walked in the back and I saw Jess and I was like, you can go fuck yourself.
Jess.
And she was like, wait, are you mad? And I was like, no.
It was perfect.
It was perfect and beautiful. And seriously, you can go fuck yourself because like I just can't, like, what is wrong with you?
Well, yeah. That's where we got to end it.
Yeah. But it was beautiful and the tributes and just the way AEW's come for my family. And there's so much that people, you know, haven't seen behind the scenes of what AEW has done for my family and done for me and done for my son. And they've let Brody kind of run wild.
Yeah. He runs this place now.
It makes me like,
he's booking shows. He's like booking matches.
He's going wild. I told Tony, I was like, you've created a monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I get really, really fucking angry if I see anybody who's like, oh, they're exploiting the family.
Yeah.
No, they're going above and beyond to let an 8-year-old live his favorite thing in the world and have his connection with his dad. Because I promise you, if Brody didn't want to do this, if he decided tomorrow he hated wrestling, we'd walk away.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, this is nothing, you know, the con, all AEW and the con family, they're not paying me to say these nice things.
You asked to be here today.
Exactly. And I wanted to clarify and I wanted to answer questions, and I'd love to do this again and tell funny stories and tell good stories.
Not just depressing shit.
The most depressing podcast of all time. Right. Can I get an award? Like, can we get a podcast award?
We'll do podcast awards.
Most depressing podcast of all time.
We absolutely will. So. You're front runner.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
You have two wonderful boys.
Oh,
very much so. And it's a testament to you and John as parents.
Oh, wonderful. Really 100%.
And we thank you for your story. And, you know, all of us here love you and love the family. We want you to come back.
Please.
Down the road.
Please.
Bring negative one with you.
Oh, God.
He actually asked me to be on the podcast today.
Yeah.
Did he?
And I said, I don't know. He goes, what if I do it with 10? I said, oh, okay, because 10 can't carry it himself. But with negative one.
Yeah, he can't put two words together.
Right, right. Because he told me, he covered his ears and said, it's because he went to a bad college. So I said, yes, I will gladly have both of you on the podcast.
We're just kidding, Vance. We love you. You can't put three words.
Oh, fun.
Went to college. Yeah, that's
right. A reminder that you can get our AEW Unrestricted podcast wherever you get your podcast for free. And don't forget to watch the YouTube version as well. And when is Dynamite?
Dynamite is Wednesdays, 8 o'clock, 7 central on TNT.
Amanda, thanks again. We love you.
Thank you so much. This is wonderful.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for being with us on AEW Unrestricted.
Bye.